Hi, everyone. We just wanted to open this episode with an acknowledgement that it's been a really difficult week for the skating community, and honestly, it's been a really hard time for the world in general. We recorded this episode back before the cancellation of Worlds was announced, but we did just want to say that we really hope everyone's doing okay. We love you, and we hope that you're safe and healthy. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Netta?
I'm doing good now. We're talking about, I'm just going to skip straight to the point. We're talking about Four Continents and the guys in it, and I just started thinking about it, and now I'm overjoyed again. Very excited.
It's a big mood booster.
Yeah, very excited to talk about this. It was a great, very good event, and we should talk about it.
We should. A lot happened. It was monumental. This is, of course, part two of our coverage. We talked about the ladies last time, continents one and two. We're now on to four continents, three continental drift. I told you I came up with another Fast and the Furious four continents joke, and I, you know, had
Are
to
you
whip it
upset
out.
That four continents was not in Tokyo?
Yeah, that actually would have made it better, huh?
That would have been the perfect joke.
You say that as though it's not already the perfect
No, it's impeccable. It would have been just even better if that's even possible, but it's still very good. I'm very proud of you.
Yes, thank you. Well, listen, speaking of things that are maybe not perfect, but very, very good, let's talk about the podium from Four Continents.
Wow. All right, let's talk about the podium at Four Continents. Without further ado, in third place, a very surprising, exciting third place. We have Wanyuma Kageyama from Japan, who made it onto the podium.
Honestly, I feel like no one was more surprised than Yuma. We made a tweet about this that made the rounds a little bit, but it was like his face on the podium was like record scratch. You may be wondering how I got here. His face is so... I can't believe this is happening.
And he's so expressive that you can just tell when he's in complete disbelief, and it's very, very charming.
I like his free skate. It's weird and different. That Tucker soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's
very good.
It is. We get a lot of skating with sound effects from, you know, glass shattering and things of that nature. We don't get a lot of, like, industrial factory sounds, so this is different for us.
It's very new. I'm not mad at it, necessarily. No, I think he's great. I don't know how to talk about this because he is... It's so surprising to me, just his trajectory this season. He won the Youth Olympics, for the record. That happened. He, full disclosure, we're recording this after Junior Worlds, and he podiumed there as well. He's just doing so good. He just showed up and started doing so good. And edged out a lot of very, 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 very good skaters for that podium spot.
Especially in the short program, if I recall correctly, the judges really, 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 really dug what he was putting down. And he stayed in the lead spot for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Over skaters who, to be honest with you, I expected to overtake him. Like several skaters who either had like a higher tech content or who had... to me, like, an as good of a PCS. But yeah, no, the judges just really, really, really loved what he was putting down. And with good reason. He really has a fluidity to him. It's like one seamless performance. It's very mature for somebody who's still very much, like, competing in the junior circuit a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting, like, looking into the future to kind of see him as one of those up-and-coming people who we're probably going to end up seeing a lot more of. And it's very exciting to me that he could feasibly be around for another decade. And we're just seeing, like, this greatness from him in his first very big international season.
Yeah.
Just a little exciting boy.
We're not going to talk, I don't think, about the gala just because a lot of it was, you know, repeats of things we've already talked about in other gala coverage. But I do want to talk about his gala real quick because...
Yes, please.
He wears this, like, brown and black shirt, which it's not my cup of tea, but it is very silky and flowy, and it's literally, like, hypnotic. Like, just maybe I just watched that particular program when I was really tired, but, like, just watch it, and it reminds me of those old screensavers of shapes that would just change and change and change. And it, you just can't look away. It's like something about it is hypnotic. That's how I felt about his exhibition. It's totally weird. Something about the choreography, it just never stops, man.
That's very evocative.
I feel like it's not, and you're just being nice to me, and I sound like Shaggy no, from Scooby-Doo.
It actually may. I mean, to be fair, we do share a single brain cell, so that might be why, but this makes a lot of sense to me as a description.
Thank you. Yeah, so congratulations, Yuma. What a season.
What an exciting season. I think I heard that he is fully moving into seniors next year, and that's going to be super exciting to see and behold. What a great season to like end your junior career on with bronze at four continents as a junior.
Hell yeah.
A couple years ago, he was 11th at Japanese Junior Championships. Then he was 12th. Then he was 5th. And then this year he won finally. And then he was 3rd, obviously, at Nationals and 3rd at four continents and won Youth Olympics and was 2nd at Junior Worlds. Just like this incredible, truly wild trajectory.
Yeah, it's making me soft about the fact that we could be seeing the beginnings of maybe the next Yuzu.
That just makes me very emotional and, like, yeah, very excited. Like I said, like, this could be another 10 years of this kid. And we get to be like, oh, yeah, we remember when he showed up in, like, podiumed four continents.
Well, congratulations, Yuma. I really can't wait to see what next season holds and how he continues to grow even more.
Yeah. Megan, without further ado, can we please talk about Jason Brown?
We sure can. Now, before we talk about Jason and Yuzu, who spoiler alert one, but that's maybe the least spoilery spoiler since wow, you accidentally said that somebody falls in a lake in Little Women.
Megan, that book is hundreds of years old.
That's what I'm saying. It's not really a spoiler, yeah, and it's also not really a spoiler that Yuzu won four continents. So, anyway, I want to say that I had a dream the night before the free skate. And I swear to God, this is true. I had a dream the night before the men's free skate. And in this dream, I dreamt that Yuzu wore like a glow-in-the-dark neon green costume, that he fell a bunch, and that Jason ended up winning four continents. Now, this is not exactly how it happened. However, did Yuzu or did Yuzu not bring out an unexpected neon green costume? And did or did not Jason get, at least he did beat Yuzu in PCS in the free skate, which no one saw coming. Am I a psychic? Yes, I am. Science point to yes.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like yes. I feel like you should have gone out and bought a lottery ticket that day and just like, I don't know, you should have made some investments because that's straight up prophetic.
Yeah, I think I was a little scared after that. But anyway, Jason, needless to say, but we're gonna say it anyway, had a really fantastic competition, and you simply love to see it.
He did so good. It's kind of insane that it's his first big international medal of that size.
This is his highest placement in international competition.
Truly insane to think that, because he's such a staple. But yeah, silver for Jason. Simply love to see it. Also, he did not skate incredibly clean. I mean, he did in the short because he's perfect and beautiful. But he had, he doubled the toe in his free skate. And one more time, there were no quads because that toe was supposed to probably be the quad attempt. And it just did not happen. It was a double. So he ended up second in the free skate and also second in the entire competition with no quads and a double. You simply love to see it.
I was going to say it's nice to see him get, you know, the kind of recognition in competition that we all want him to have. I think it's like the past couple of years, it's really been coming together for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's like the coaching change or the programs he's had or what's going on, the haircut. We simply don't know. But he really has been getting pretty much across the board the kind of high PCS that we want to see. And, you know, that, like, shouldn't be remarkable, but the truth is, a lot of the time, when skaters have the kind of presence on the ice and the kind of skating skills and the kind of, like, musicality that Jason has, that's not to say that there's that many skaters who are at his level of those skills, but a lot of skaters will have the kind of interpretation and artistry, as they say, that viewers at home or fans really connect to and would expect that PCS would reflect that, and then they don't, and it's, like, baffling as to why. And so at least Jason is someone who recently has not been getting totally stiffed on that front. I'm going to knock on wood.
I am running out of things to say about Jason, because I feel like since the beginning of this season, we've talked about how incredible both of his programs are so many times, but it bears repeating. I will say this. I adore his short. I think it's very sensual and very beautiful, and it makes me experience emotions. I do not think it reaches the absolute feral hype of Love is a Bitch for me, personally.
No, I'd agree. It feels like Love is a Bitch 2, and it's not quite the sequel that lives up to the original.
It's like the same character has moved on from their initial anger at said person, and now they're kind of bargaining again. And I don't know how I feel about that, even though it's a very beautiful song and it's very intimate. And of course, he kills it. It's a good program. What I do want to say again is that his free skate just breaks me every time. It's perfect. I do not think there is a single thing that could be changed to make that free skate better.
Yeah, to be honest, like, you know, every season, for whatever reason, oh my god, that rhymed. Has, like, a warhorse that everybody does because no one compared notes or something. I don't know. It was just in the air. And it's not every season that there's such a clear, objective best one. Like, I honestly don't feel bad saying that because I think some of them are good and some of them are less good. And it doesn't take away from that. I just think that this is the one. Like, with Carmen last season, we could all, you know, have a discussion whose was the best Carmen. But at the end of the day, I don't know if there was a mass consensus on it. But, like, I truly think that the mass consensus would say that Jason's is the Schindler's List of the season.
It's just so well crafted, and I mean, it's exquisitely performed every single time. There's not a single second where it looks like he's checked out. He's always so present in it, and it really delivers. And of course, for literally probably the fifth time on air, I need to talk about the very end of that program, because it's so good, because it's so... It's such a strenuous program, and he does so many truly impossible things with, like, the incredibly stretchy spirals and everything. And then the way it just falls at the very end just kills me every time. Yeah. It's so good. It's such smart choreo. There is no other way it could have ended. There is no other way it could have developed throughout this piece. It's just so good. We're so lucky to get to see this program. It makes me very emotional.
Yeah, there really isn't a more emotionally impactful way it could end. And it's funny because, like, I mean, we'll talk about Yuzo in a second, but he has that thing he does where he, like, you know, imitates people's choreography as a love language. And when I think at one point somebody had taken, like, it's not, I keep calling it fan cam, because but that's like a K-pop thing, right?
Well, it's always, like, it's like video of.
Yeah, people taking, like fans taking video of, like, him, like, collapsing on the ground and Jason being like, oh, ha, 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 that's my choreography. And so, you know, all that, like, wholesome stuff that we love to see.
It's pure and good. And it's, I mean, that's testament to greatness, right? When the goat picks it out as the one moment that he imitates for as his love language, as he's known to do. What a man. Should we talk about him?
Because I can keep talking.
I just punched my microphone. I can keep talking about Jason and punching my microphone for hours, but maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah, give the microphone a break. Well, I think that it's nice, the two, that they're training mates, and presumably they can, like, you know, push each other, and it's gotta feel good to be the cricket club and have gold and silver be skaters, right?
Yeah, I would assume it's good and motivating, because regardless of, like, how often they get to compete against each other or, like, anything like that, I would assume when you're working day in, day out with kind of the same group of people, there is a camaraderie that should come with that. Like, hey, we did the thing. It's not a team effort per se, but it's good, I would assume.
And I know sometimes we can be critical on this program about when, you know, the same skating club and all their skaters are always on the podium all the time. And I think the reason this doesn't rub me the wrong way is because the two skaters represent different nations. They've been, you know, training with different people at different times, and they have such distinct styles and distinct choreography. And so it doesn't feel like a monopoly.
Yeah, it's like, it's not as cookie cutter, I guess, because, like you said, the athletes that we're talking about now are both people that have worked with other coaches in the past and also people who work with a lot of different choreographers and have very, very different styles, like you said. So it doesn't feel like, oh, this is just cricket and it doesn't matter who it is or what they're performing. It's just like some music is playing and it's a cricket person. I agree. Also, side note about cricket and all of that, I was reading a little interview on Twitter with Joseph Fan, who trains at cricket and is a junior, and he was like saying basically the same thing. He was like, I mean, how many other people get to like train with Yuzu and Jason and Evgenia every day? And he was talking about that as something that inspires and motivates him as a junior who's growing up to join senior ranks. So that's like, I think it's a very motivating atmosphere over there for basically everyone involved.
And as we all know from the I Just Missed Javi crying under the Spanish flag infamous story, they do have all the flags in cricket club on display because it's something they're really proud of, that they train athletes from all over the world.
Side note, the cricket main rink, as we've seen from like people's Instagram and other footage of it, is gorgeous. Have we talked about this ever?
I think we have. Well, we've talked about how they don't have boards and how that would be really scary for me because how else would I drag myself around or stop?
Let's talk about Yuzu, who does skate there.
He sure does. So the big talk of the town around Yuzu going into Four Continents was, first of all, is he got to finally win Four Continents?
Yeah, that was the last thing out of like every single big boy comp that he had not won.
Yeah, and he had brought back his Olympics programs, Ballade by Chopin. And then Seimei, of course. There was all this discourse of like, is it bad to recycle? Is it good to recycle? If you criticize him for recycling, are you a reprehensible human being who should be arrested? Or
yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is, of course, yes, definitely. But at the same time, I think there was this feeling of some of us were excited to see those programs again, and some of us were like, we have to see these programs again, and some of us felt both.
I feel like I spoke about it at length whenever we talked about this a couple episodes back. I was questioning it not because I don't like the idea, but just because as a performer, obviously in a different light, but I feel like sometimes you know that you've done the absolute best you could possibly do with a piece, and there's no use in bringing it back just because regardless of anything, you can never capture, in his case, like Olympic glory, like finishing Seimei and knowing that that's it. Like, you can't capture that. However, I will say that I've changed my mind. And I will tell you why. I've changed my mind because he's always been incredible. Obviously, he's a 2-time Olympic champion. I feel like even still, in the past 2 years since the Olympics, by the way, it's been 2 years since the Olympics. I know, it's insane.
I was literally just thinking that. I was like, that can't be right, but it
no,
is.
No, yeah, it has been exactly 2 years since the Olympics. We're halfway there to a new Olympics. Jesus Christ. But anyway, what I was saying is, even in those 2 years since his second Olympic gold medal, his skating has matured more still again. And also he has come into his own as like a more, the stakes are different for him now. I'm not saying he's like more chill. I'm saying he is at peace with himself in a different way, which makes the quality of both of those programs different now in a very good way. It feels like going to the concert of like an artist who's incredibly big now and hearing them sing like one of the songs they wrote when they were younger.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's not that he has nothing left to prove, but I think that back when he was first doing these programs, because it was the Olympics and the stakes were so high, and now it's like, I don't want to put words in his mouth because I don't know him, but if I was in his position, I think I would feel a little more secure in my status as the GOAT, even in his own, like, obviously very humble way, yeah. Which is, I think, that energy that you are describing. Also, I'm always very, like, fine with recycling. I think it's nice. I think in terms of just my opinions on these two programs, the Chopin is not my favorite. It's obviously like still way better than like most programs ever because it's Yuzu and it's gorgeous. But for me, actually, I think certain pieces of music, and Chopin Ballade is one of those for me, have such a languid quality to them that the amount of choreography and transitions and just required elements that you would have to do to have a strong competitive program is, like, going to overwhelm the music. Whatever, I'm not a choreographer, but just for me personally, that's an example of a piece of music that I almost just want to see somebody, like, just kind of glide around and every once in a while do a spread just eagle like too.
A nice edge class to Chopin.
Totally, totally. Yeah, the piece of music is just a little too, like, peaceful and languid for that level of complicated stuff for me personally, just my opinion.
Wow, that was a lot of defensive language at the very end of that. This is your own safe space, Megan. You can just say you don't like it as much as something else.
I know, but I'm a little afraid of criticizing anything about Yuzuru Hanyu.
Hi, welcome to episode 28. We're still making sure people like her opinions. No, but I personally believe that in my personal own opinion, if I could pick from like column A and column B, I would mix and match his season and I would do an Otonyal for his short and then same A for the free. That's my personal preference. Because I agree, for some reason I don't connect to the Chopin program as much as I connect to Otonyal, mostly because I've waxed poetic about the step sequence in Otonyal before, and it's one of my favorite things to ever be on ice. And I think Seimei is hype in this way where it still carries the glamour of, like, the last thing he did before he snatched his second Olympic gold. That energy, seeing that return, I was like, okay, yes, work. I feel like the biggest upgrade that we got to talk about is the neon.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was an upgrade for me personally. I don't know if it was maybe a downgrade. I know I dreamt it into existence, and I do apologize if anybody feels fault. Like me. This is your fault. It is my fault. I know. I'm sorry. I don't know how I feel. It was a little Barney the Dinosaur with the green and purple. It was a little I'm going out for a bike ride at night, but I'm safe. It was...
Safety is very important.
It is important. I liked the blue better. I don't know.
I really like it.
Okay.
I'm not sure why I like it. Here's why I like it. I'm building this narrative, and I may or may not be wrong, but I'm building this narrative about this Yuzu who is completely confident in his position, like you said. And I feel like this color is a testament to that, because he is the absolute king of flowy stuff and beading and sequin and purple pants and, like, you name it, he's done it. However, he's always done, like, jewel tones and pastels or black. Neon is a new brave, bold choice for him. I feel like neon is the one thing he hasn't touched before. And if we wanted to go into this position of overanalyzing costume design, I would go ahead and say that this is, like, the one thing he had not touched before. In a costume.
Do you think it's like the Miranda Priestly thing of, like, he's the high fashion, like, ridiculous trendsetter that you look at and you're like, oh, heavens no, that's not for me. But then it's going to trickle down and now everyone's going to be wearing neon next season.
I mean, Nathan's new yellow already exists and I hate to bring it up because I don't want to make this about comparison, but Nathan already wore neons.
You can only like one shade of neon. Everybody knows that. If you go to Staples and you get a highlighter, everyone knows you can only get one at a time and you have to pick yellow or green and just stick with it.
I've only always purchased purple highlighters. What does that say about me?
It says that you're a purple person, which is a whole thing.
Yeah.
Purple doesn't really, I think it's too dark. I can't see words through it.
Well, I don't really highlight because I color code all of my writing and I don't need to.
Okay, Virgo.
But I like a purple. I have this lilac highlighter, which is really nice. This is a skating podcast.
Okay, but Yuzu took it to a place where we can now very seamlessly go there. Thank you, Yuzu.
Thank you, Yuzu. Everyone say thank you, Yuzu.
Everyone say thank you, Yuzu. My opinion on Seimei is that of course, I love it. I think it's iconic. It's one of my favorites. I think that the choreography is a little bit more of a crisp, athletic vibe to it. And to be perfectly honest with you, although, I mean, gosh, I would never say that Seimei is not a very artistic program because it super is. I do think that the fact that Jason's program was so flowy and lyrical was what allowed him to get that slight PCS edge over this particular Yuzu. Like, I don't know if Origin would have given
that same leeway. Yeah, there is no way to know. Yeah. You know what? That's right. I think you're right about that. There is no way to know what those fractions of points would have been.
You know what I'll say about Origin? I do think that Yuzu, as very well illustrated by you know, Belad next to Seimei. I do think Yuzu kind of has two modes, two main characters or vibes. He has, like, ethereal, floaty elven prince, and then he has, like, murder face, beast mode. The elven prince's whole family got murdered, and now he's out for revenge. And I think that what I like about Origin is that it's both, sort of.
Yeah. He's, no, I'm not, I was gonna do a complicated D&D joke, but I'm not gonna.
My whole life is a complicated D&D joke.
My whole life is a complicated joke, period. But maybe one day we do the D&D bonus episode we keep talking about, and then I talk you through my thought process here. But I think I just figured out Yuzu's class as a D&D character.
Which is
I'll talk to you about it. Patreon.com/ICTpod.
I have to get Patreon for Netta to have certain conversations with me.
Patreon.com/Netta Marie does exist.
It does exist.
It's inactive right now, but you could pay me and I will talk to you about D&D.
This is the only way I'm able to have friends, is I just pay them money to talk to me.
Oh, honey, no.
So anyway, you know, it's like we're having all these conversations about this Yuzu program versus that Yuzu program. And of course, it's all just like top tier, grade A quality, good stuff. Got him his first Four Continents medal. And you could tell that the man was just very pleased to be at the top of the podium again, especially to collect this like rare Pokemon of a medal.
Yeah, it was like the one jewel missing in his crown, and now he's got it, and that's
it was the final Chaos Emerald.
Or alternatively, I don't know how Infinity Stones work. I tapped out of that entire franchise, but he has all of them now, so congrats.
I would be okay with being finger snapped out of existence if Yuzu did it.
Wow.
All right. We have some really exciting stuff coming up for you on the other side of the break, but we do have to do a break first, so let's do it right now. I had a dream last night that you went to Apple Podcasts and rated us 5 stars and left us a really nice comment. And as we all know, my dreams affect the shape of reality. And before you knew it, you were already doing these things. Oh, what's that? You're already doing them right now. Sorry about it, but I'm not actually sorry because I want you to do it.
Yeah, if you don't rate us 5 stars in Apple Podcasts right now, it's going to trigger a whole butterfly effect because Megan dreamt it. And if you don't do it, it's just going to like tear a hole in the fabric of time and space. And it's just going to be a whole ordeal. So please just go to Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars, leave us a nice review, save the world. And we're going to be very, very grateful.
So what else do we want to do? Talk about Patreon. We have a Patreon. We just released a new bonus episode. It's super fun. The theme is fun.
Yeah, we released a new episode and for once we had fun. So if you want to hear us for once have fun, you can go to patreon.com/icedpod. Literally keep the lights on in our metaphorical studio, make this podcast happen. We're very, very grateful. We're going to shout out some great people who've already done that at the end of the show. But in the meantime, go to patreon.com/icedpod and find months and months. I think we're coming up to like half a year's worth of bonus content. So that's a lot of things for you to enjoy. Head over.
Yes, absolutely. Do that. So now we're heading into the second half of this episode, which, surprise, is a little bit different than our usual. They're going to see the title of the episode and know what it is, so it's fine.
You already know where we're headed if you read the title of this episode, but this was such a treat. We're going to talk about it more at the very end. Here's a treat for you. Enjoy.
All right, so for the next portion of this episode, we have a very, very special guest. We have somebody who is a podcast favorite, a fashion icon, and the literal inventor of the quadruple toe loop, Mr. Camden Pulkkinen is with us on the podcast today.
Oh my god, hi Camden, we're so excited to have you here. How are you doing?
Hey guys, I'm super happy to be here. I wouldn't quite call myself the inventor of the quad toe, but I will say I'm an inventor of saving the quad toe, so...
You defy physics, the savior of the quad toe.
Savior
of the quad toe.
Yeah, we'll take that one.
So this episode for us is covering the men's singles event at Four Continents. Obviously, you were there. Mm-hmm. How do you feel looking back on it?
You know, I think going into the event, I didn't expect it to be as difficult as it was. There were, in the short programs explicitly, I think there were 12 queen skates or 11. I don't quite remember, but it quite literally, this finally felt like a senior event. Whereas I think on the Grand Prix, yeah, there was Han Yu and Bo Yang and a couple of different really experienced competitors. But in this championship event, everyone was bringing it. And, you know, I was, of course, there were a lot of places I could have done better in the long and in the short. But at the end of the day, I was pretty delighted that I kept my own and finished the season fairly strong. So looking back, I think it was a good experience. And I'm really just grateful that I had that opportunity to go to my first four continents.
I think you did so great. I actually want to ask about that. Looking back, that short program, from an audience perspective, there was this moment where people were like, everyone is just skating so good. Like, what is happening? This is kind of crazy. Are you aware of that while it's happening? Do you watch other people, or are you more of like someone who wants to not know how everyone else is doing?
Yeah, I definitely know people that don't like to know the scores, but in competition, really, it's hard to block it out. So I'd rather be more comfortable with knowing the score and then knowing that I have to deliver it. And luckily, actually, in the short, Tomoki, my really good friend and training mate, he skated right before me. And we had the same coach there, Damon Allen, there with us. And Damon put both me and Tomoki out. So Tomoki went, of course, skated lights out, as Tomoki does. He scored a really good score. And I remember looking at my coach, Damon and Tammy, and Damon couldn't hide the smile on his face from Tomoki's score. And of course, I was listening. I was like, okay, 88, that's a solid score for Tomoki. There's no way I could have blocked that out, because Damon was very happy with the score, and like, as he should be. He very well should have been happy with it. And it may have thrown me for a little bit of a loop in the past. But something I really worked on this past year is hearing those competitors' scores and being okay with it and realizing that it's kind of nothing I can control and I can only focus on myself. And I know it sounds extremely cliche to say that, but it's super, super true, because in competition, when you're in Grand Prix or even at championship events, everyone's going to be skating well. Like, I got 11th in the short with an 84, which probably would have gotten me somewhere in the top four at a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So everyone's skating well, and at the end of the day, you can't let that distract you. You have to be comfortable with it, and it's really hard, because when I hear 88, I'm like, okay, my high is 89, and that was with a perfect skate, so this is going to be hard. Luckily, I trained the program really well, and I trusted that, and it worked out in the end with an 84, which of course didn't put me ahead of anyone else, but could have been worse. So it kept me in the running. And at the end of the day, that's like kind of where I was trying to be at Four Continents, just in the running.
Well, it seems like the kind of thing that, with this being your first full senior season, like, these are all these learning experiences for you, right? Sorry, that didn't come out correct. Good. Take two. These learning experiences for you, right?
Yeah. It's all like, this is going to sound extremely cliche too, but this first senior season is all about learning. It's all about getting those different experiences where, okay, Grand Prix with Han Yu, I'm skating right before him, and I'm competing against him. I'm competing against a two-time Olympic champion. That's the experience I would never have gotten in junior.
Yeah,
that I'm really happy that I got in senior. Other than all the placements and some great skates I had this season, it's all about that learning experience. And like, of course, I wish I would have done better at nationals, and I wish I would have done better at some of my competitions, but I know that next year, when I hopefully do it all again, I'll be better prepared, and I'll understand, okay, this is kind of what it's like to be against Han Yu. This is what it feels like to do a quad in a program. Next year is the season where I really want to be a contender for medals on Grand Prix and possibly even the final. Because if I really am serious about that Olympic team, which I am, and there's a lot of great skaters in the U.S., I have to start stepping up this season.
I'm already so excited.
Do you have any specific goals set for next season? Like, you mentioned maybe making the final. Do you have anything like in mind that you're already wanting to make?
Yeah, I mean, those are all goals I'm just saying right now, because I genuinely want to do that. I haven't really sat down with my team yet and talked about what goals we want to make, but those are some personal goals I have. Of course, making the final is always a really big stretch, even for an experienced competitor. But I do think it's very possible to get medals on the Grand Prix, possibly some bronzes, maybe even a silver. Like, I remember at Skate Canada last year, I ended up second in the short, and I was like, oh my god, I could get a medal at my first Grand Prix, which maybe was the reason I didn't get a medal. I started thinking that. So it's like moments like that, that I learned last year. Okay, now I'm experienced and now I will be better prepared for that free program once I am in medal contention. And honestly, all competitions are different. I can't expect myself to be in the same place I was last year, but mm-hmm. I know that I'm going to be even more prepared to get medals on the Grand Prix. And I'm going, it's my quad. Like we said earlier, you called me the inventor of the quad, but hopefully this year I will not have to save any quads. And even in the off season, I've been working really hard on that core consistency of the quad. So then there's mm-hmm. really no question about it.
I want to go back a little bit. Like we said, this was your first full senior season. What are the personal highlights from that?
Honestly, my favorite moments was every competition, going out and not having a disaster. that sounds really negative, I understand. But it's kind of true, because 2 years ago when I was junior, that last year in junior was really upsetting for me, because I felt like in a way, everything was lined up for me to get medals and for me to be a world junior medalist, maybe not champion, but medalist at least. And I kind of blew that because I got inside my own head. So this whole season was just about me reconstructing myself and becoming more stable. So even though some programs did have mistakes, most programs did, I think all of them did, honestly, but I was happy that I could, you know, up the technical content with a quad and mm-hmm. still deliver a performance and a put together performance that didn't drop me below anywhere I should be. At all competitions, I think, at least looking back, I felt like I was in a place that I should be in, not a place that was abnormally low. So it was really good for me to know that I'm not defined by those junior free mm-hmm. skates and that I can come back from that. And that's something that really like helped me build confidence in myself, not just in skating, but in life. That I am not a failure. I know.
Of course you're not. Oh my God.
I know it sounds really depressing, but that's kind of how I felt after Junior Worlds 2 years ago, because I dropped it so far below where I feel like I should have been. So every competition was a build up for me, and every competition was a way that built my confidence, regardless of placement. So that's really what my personal takeaway was from it.
I have to imagine it's probably a little bit of a confidence boost to hear Yuzuru Hanyu compliment your triple axel.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I remember, first off, after that short, I was like on top of the moon. I was like, wow, I just scored 89 points in my first senior Grand Prix. I don't know what to do with my life. And then next thing you know, I have conference and I'm sitting next to someone that I remember when I was juvenile, watching him at a Grand Prix final win. And I'm sitting next to him. I'm in second place. Of course, there was like a 15-point gap because he is God. But it was like I'm in the same room with him, in a conference with him. I'm sitting next to someone I looked up to, and just hearing that he respected me to some extent was mind-boggling. And seeing him again at Four Continents, it was good to see him, because I felt less of like a fanboy and more of a friend to him, because since after Canada, he's kind of been just like really nice to me, and I feel more comfortable with him. Like at events, I can see him, and like first thing we did at Korea was give each other a hug and say, hi, how are you? And it was just like, I still feel like a fanboy, but I feel more of a friend. And I remember at the banquet at Four Continents, everyone was like, oh, Hanyu, photo, photo, photo. But he went out of his way to come up to me and say hi to me. And he took out his iPod and took a selfie with me. And he's like,
oh, I'm just going to get the selfie.
And I was like, I'm like crying on the inside, like low key, but he wanted a selfie with me. It was just like, wow, this is a class act. Like, this man is a man of class.
I feel like you should take that and just remember that. And now you have it on record as well for next time you feel like a failure, because
yeah.
You're wrong. You're very wrong.
It's so hard to remember the good things, isn't it? I think we all struggle with that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, exactly.
So something that you mentioned earlier was that at Four Continents, you were there with your training mate, Tomoki, and we wanted to ask, like, how is it to go to competitions when Tomoki's there or Karen's there? Do you guys get to hang out, and has that changed the experience for you, or is everybody very focused on their own thing?
Yeah, I mean, like, Karen and I, when we're together, we always spend not every second, but a lot of time together, because she's obviously over in Cornell, and I'm here in Colorado, and luckily in the off-season, I'm going to go visit her for a few weeks and spend some time with her, so that'll be nice to see her, but it's for competitions, Tomoki kind of does his own thing. I think he likes to just, he doesn't like to go out a lot, he likes to just stay in his room and play video games, which I understand.
Very valid. That's
relatable, yeah. Video games are fun, I get it. But yeah, Karen and I definitely, like, we explored the city a lot and did some cute things together, got some traditional Korean food while we were there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's usually fun with my training mates because it's a familiar face, and that's the hardest part about competition is being with all these people you don't see too often. So That's why I love, like, having this great environment here in Colorado where we all can go to competitions and say, oh, hey, what's up? You're my friend. Yeah, it's very comforting. Tomoki and I had all the practice together. So it was like, okay, this kind of gives me comfort that someone from my home is with me in practice.
You get to travel so much and go basically All over the world. Do you get time to just be a tourist for like a day?
Yeah, I make sure that I at least go out and see the city, even a little bit, because if you travel to Korea, per se, and you're just staying in the hotel, I feel like there's no point in really going, because More than just skating, it's an opportunity to go see the world and see this different culture and see the different architecture and see how other places of the world work. And That's probably one of the biggest reasons why I love skating is because of all the travel and all the unique places I've gone. Like for Grand Prix China, I would have never expected to go to Chongqing, China, but I got to go there and it was a really unique experience that it wouldn't have been on the top of my bucket list, but since I had a competition there, it forced me to go there and explore that place and explore Sichuan, China.
Is there a place you really want to go that you haven't been yet?
I've gone to Asia quite a bit. I do want to go to South America, like maybe Brazil or Peru. Oh, okay. I don't know. I think something over there would be really, really cool and unique, but I don't think there's going to be any figure skating competitions there.
Hey, you never know.
Maybe that'll have to be something I do on my own time.
On a personal note, I am from Sofia, Bulgaria, where you did compete. I'm currently a walking distance from the arena where you competed.
Oh my god, that was arena. I forgot what it was called.
It's called Hermes.
Yeah,
it's like
it's
a weird thing.
I remember it was in Cyrillic, I believe.
Yeah, it is. I was not in Bulgaria for a whole bunch of fun events that I missed. Very sad.
We all have that. Like, Worlds was in my neck of the woods in 2016, but I was in grad school somewhere else. It's just the way it rolls out.
Not meant to be.
You're from Boston, yeah?
I'm from Providence, but it's only like an hour away.
Providence. That's where Brown is.
It is where Brown
right?
is.
Yeah. All the Ivy League campuses that I've been to so far are stunning. Kind of makes me want to go to an Ivy League one day, to be honest.
Do you have plans for that? Are you planning on going to?
Well, to be honest, like, skating is very important, but also education is. And that's why I am taking classes at University of Colorado right now. Just awesome. So I am a little more well-balanced, I guess, and not necessarily just a skater. I want to also maybe one day explore what else the world has to offer and other aspects of work. So yeah, I'm still going to school right now, and in my mind, school's always going to be there one day, whether, like, you could honestly go to school if you're 50.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's a little bit late, but, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be skating for, but eventually I hope to go to a really good school, maybe not an Ivy League, but a school that can really, like, connect me with others with the same interests.
What are your interests?
I'm currently studying business finance.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I was thinking of taking business accounting, though, or switching my major to business accounting. But at the same time, I don't see myself sitting in an office all day being an accountant. I'd rather, like, talk to people about their money and figure out where it can go and the different investment options. So definitely something with numbers and money, but I'm just not necessarily what exactly yet.
That is so impressive to me. Megan and I both studied like music and theater and stuff.
Honestly, those things, as long as it's your passion, there's no discrimination. If you're very passionate about music and theater, that's what you do.
Incredible. Back to skating. You've spoken in other interviews and stuff about your programs that you did this season and how you picked them and everything. I was curious about how they feel now that you've skated them a bunch.
Well, this last year, I really felt like I connected a lot with my short. And I felt like, honestly, that was probably the stronger program of the two. And I think with the long, I really did love it, but I think it could be better. And I really liked the gist of it. I liked the blouse. I liked all the costume. Everything, the aesthetic was good. But I think with programs moving forward, I'm starting to figure out what type of skater I want to be like. And there's no one person I want to be like, but people that I've kind of watched over the years and really like respected their programs was Patrick Chan. He was my idol growing up, other than Han Yu. And then also Han Yan. And Han Yan's kind of a new one because I never really loved his skating until competing against him twice. He's a beautiful skater. And I think it'd be good for me to kind of take that approach and maybe go for a softer, mature program. Maybe not necessarily classical, but something that's really going to elevate me to show off some beautiful lines and some great skating. This long just didn't work out as well as previous programs because I felt extremely frantic throughout it. There were just a lot of things that I think I could have done better throughout the season to fix. But I know moving forward now that my long program needs to be maybe a little more paced and a little softer. But at the same time, still giving that same raw emotion and passion that I know I can give when I'm in touch with a piece of music.
That's like something we talk a lot about on the podcast and honestly off mic as well. Just kind of the way you connect to a program. How does that work for you? Are you connected with the particular story of a piece of music? Like, for example, with like West Side Story, there's obviously a pre-existing thing.
For me, I've never figured myself to be a character skater, which is kind of contradictory to my whole West Side Story. I felt like I never really was the type of person to connect with just a story because it is that person's story or that movie's story, but it's not my own. I'm selfish in the sense that I like to create my own story. So through programs, it's not necessarily something that I look at beforehand and I say, what kind of story do I want to create? Honestly, it's something that I create as I go on. And for me, every performance is a different story to an extent. And what the jumps do and the spins do is they fuel me with emotion. The more I succeed, it's kind of like a snowball effect. If I hit the first jump, then I'm going to go to the second one with so much emotion, so much happiness and passion that it's just going to keep getting better and better as it goes on. So it's never really one certain story that I'm giving for performance. It's kind of just emotion throughout. And I know it's hard for some people to wrap their head around that, but it's hard for me to tell a story with my skating because I think the story should be up to the viewer to interpret however they like, because skating is an art. And just like contemporary art or abstract art, it's not really up to what the creator chooses. It's up to the viewer. And as long as I can give some sort of emotion to those who watch my skating, then I see it as a success.
Well, let me tell you, Netta and I both have Masters of Fine Arts in Experimental Theater, and you at age, 19, 20?
19.
You don't need one. You've already got most of what we learned.
Yeah.
So you've got the right idea.
I'm genuinely moved by like how much you're in the right place talking to us because, this is such a smart way, I think, to approach any sort of performance.
That's, I think, that why we really enjoy watching you skate is because you have that, like, authentic emotional connection that does come through.
Because I've had so many choreographers ask me, what story do you want to tell? And to be honest, it's a hard question for me to answer because I may tell a story to someone, but since skating is so abstract and since the art, most of the art we see nowadays is up to the individual's perspective, it's hard for me to tell exactly what story I want the viewer to receive. I can tell what emotions I want them to receive, like anger, happiness, but everybody else has their own interpretation of any piece of art, and skating is an art.
Beautiful. Okay, here's the question. It's all very abstract. If you meet a person, or like an alien comes down to Earth, and they've never seen figure skating, and they don't know what it is, and you have like 10 minutes and access to YouTube, what would you show them?
What would I show them in 10 minutes?
Yeah, or like 15. Like a couple, like I guess a couple performances, or just anything that you would be like, this is quintessential, this is figure skating.
Well, first, I think I would pick Yuna Kim, her Vancouver Olympic short program, I'd say. Or mm-hmm. free. Actually, honestly, either or. Just pick Yuna Kim. Any skate of hers. Beautiful. Solid. Easy. And then I think I would pick, for a guy, I'd pick two guys. Patrick Chan for a program, and then Nathan. Because Nathan can show the power and the precision and the technique that's needed for this beautiful sport that we do. And then Patrick can show off those beautiful edges and control that you really need for it. And I think Yuna can show off that emotion. And then maybe another person I would show would be Stefan. After working with him for my programs, he was someone that always skated from his heart. Actually, as my choreography with him progressed, I've learned it. But it was always hard for me to understand because I used to be kind of robotic. Like, okay, what choreograph do you want me to do? What movement do you want here and there and there and there? But honestly, he was just like, just feel it. If you want to do that and you feel like it works well, then do it. And I was like, what do you mean? I don't know what to do. Come on, just give me something. But over time, I've kind of learned to understand what he means. He means that if I feel like something's right, even if it may not be the most technically perfect movement, then that's honestly more important than having a very precise, like, free leg or turnout, but something that's more abstract and gives a feeling. I value that more than just a perfect line. Of course, a perfect line is beautiful and that's kind of what we all go for, but like I don't think some of my lines are that perfect. I think I need to work on that, but I can kind of rely on myself to give some emotion. So yeah, I would say Stefan's program.
That's a great list.
It is. That is honestly, I don't know if I could do a better one. Gosh, there was an interview that came out with Stefan like a week ago, maybe, with Inside Skating. And he said a quote basically about how there are certain programs that you watch and you don't watch them like ticking off boxes of like, here's an element, here's an element. Mm-hmm. It's been going on for 2 minutes. It's been going on for 3 minutes. It ends and you feel like you just like, what just happened to me for the last 4 minutes? I thought he articulated that really well. Something we talk about a lot on this program is that for any teenager in the performing arts, whether it's, you know, skating is obviously a sport, but it's, you know, there's overlap, or, you know, theater, which is more our world. It's really scary, especially for teenagers, to say, I feel emotions and I'm going to let other people know that I feel emotions.
I feel like especially for young men, too, it's hard mm-hmm. to show those emotions because, you know, like me growing up, I grew up in public school and, you know, I always was made fun of for a skater and for being a skater and feeling emotions and stuff. But as I've grown up, it doesn't really matter because all it is it's me displaying myself. And skating is such a, or any type of theater is a very hard thing to do, to kind of give yourself to that performance and freely just let yourself fly. And some people feel self-conscious about their emotions. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, emotions are what make us human. And that's something I've learned through skating, is emotions are not something to be afraid of or something to be shy of and say, oh my gosh, I feel these emotions. I can't say them because I don't want to sound like I'm a wuss or anything. But what you feel is authentic. And whatever you feel is your truth. So whether that's anger, happiness, love, those are all things that I think one should learn to embrace. And that's the whole part of growing up. As you grow up, you learn a lot of things. And I think one of the biggest lessons that gets overshadowed is that one should learn to feel. Feel whatever they feel. Take that time to understand what you're going through, or take that time to understand that happiness you feel. It's all growth. And That's why I think there's the junior and senior levels, because maybe technical elements aside, at the junior levels, we see more performances that are just technical and just, okay, here's a triple axel, here's a Lutz loop, or whatever it may be. But in the senior levels, we see a lot more skaters that are just emotionally intact and skate more mature. And that's when someone says, you need to skate like a senior, that's kind of what I think. I think senior is being in touch with your emotions rather than just going through a movement. And then I think if someone can understand their emotions, then they're going to feel more secure about who they are and their identity.
You're out here, like, dropping all this wisdom just for the world.
If you ever want to host a podcast, we can just retire, honestly. No,
that's your job.
Goodness, so you're about to turn 20, right? I think you and I have something in common, which is that we both have big milestone birthdays next month.
Oh, really? You're a March birthday?
Yeah, I'm a Pisces, are you an Aries?
I am an Aries.
Okay, so we're not quite in sync there, but not I am quite. Turning 30 next month, and you're turning 20.
Wow.
So, do you have any big plans?
No, I have a few shows and seminars. I have a few in North Dakota. Of course, I said I was going to see Karen, so I'm excited to kind of really take this off season to relax, because I really did have a full season. This whole season, I had so many internationals, I think 6 or 7. So I'm really going to take this time to rest my mind more than my body. Recently, I've been working a lot more on the toe consistency and trying to add another quad. Recently, I've been working a little bit on Lutz. Not going to promise anything, but, you know, there's the technical side to skating. So,
of course.
And which is great. I love the technical side, too. Yeah, really, off season is a time to just work hard and enjoy life a little more, and I'm happy my birthday falls in the off season, because like I can actually enjoy my birthday and not really worry about any competitions. So I'm really excited to spend time with family and with Karen and spend time on the ice alone playing with different music.
That sounds like a great plan for a birthday.
Yeah.
It does. Something we do for our guests who are not currently competitive skaters is we say, like, design your dream season. Like, what are your costumes? What music do you skate to? Who's choreographing you? Now, obviously, you're in a position where, to some extent, you get to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But is there anything on your bucket list, like a piece of music or a choreographer or a costume idea or anything that just at some point in your life you want to do?
Something I've always wanted to do is just choreograph my own program. I think that's something that we see a lot of people have been trending. It's been trending quite a bit. Some people like have their own say in their choreo. But I think one day I might want to choreograph my own program. Of course, I don't want to come across narcissistic and say I have the best choreography, because I definitely do not. Sometimes I'm like, wow, that was emotionally ugly. So I think maybe in the next 5 years, it'd be nice to choreograph my own exhibition piece and really take the time to let whatever I feel fly and kind of have no restrictions with that, and just give a raw performance that no one else has a say in. Maybe like someone like Stefan could look at it and say, okay, like, you want to try this? Do you want to try that? And if I'm like, nah, I don't feel like it, then I won't do it. But I really want to choreograph my own piece one day. I don't know when that will be, but I think I'm gonna do that sometime.
That's such a cool goal.
Super look forward to seeing that happen.
We encourage you to do that as two people who have now utmost faith in your artistic sensibility after this conversation.
Yes, we trust you to do good with this.
Thank you.
We know it's gonna be excellent. All right, well, if we may be a little silly, because this is a comedy podcast on some level at least, we have heard / seen that you are a fan of Pokemon. Is that true?
I am a fan of Pokemon.
What Pokemon, like, embodies your soul? Like, if you were a Pokemon, what would you
be? Are you familiar with Pokemon?
I am, yeah. I don't know if Netta is.
I'm not as familiar, but I'm kind of familiar.
You know, I think there's a lot of different Pokemon that embody me. Sometimes I really feel like a Psyduck, if you know what that is.
Yeah.
I really feel super dumb.
Aww. Like,
sometimes Psyduck has moments of brilliance.
Sometimes Psyduck does, but sometimes also Psyduck runs into walls and stuff. So sometimes I feel like a Psyduck. Honestly, I like Pikachu, but Pikachu's maybe a little too happy for me. Sometimes I definitely am too hard on myself. So a Pokemon I've been embodying recently is Mewtwo, because
Ooh.
I kind of like how prominent Mewtwo is, and I don't know if you've ever seen any of the movies, but
yeah,
at one point he kind of did his own thing and like just like I kind of like that vibe he has. He just does his own thing. So I'd say I really like Mewtwo. Mewtwo's a fun one. Yeah, I'm going to go with Mewtwo. That's my final guess.
I have to tell you, I was petrified of Mewtwo after I saw that movie as a kid. I yeah. was so afraid of Mewtwo because, like, I don't know, man, there was something about him. You're right. He's got this, like, weird, angsty, like,
yeah.
I can talk and maybe, like, plot a revolution kind of energy.
That's why I always liked him. He was, like, one of the ones I always knew and always enjoyed because yeah. he was kind of dangerous.
Netta, what Pokemon are you?
I don't actually know. I want to say I'm Eevee, but that's just because I like Eevee. I don't actually know the...
Can evolve into any type he wants.
Yeah, I feel like as a theater person and a drag performer, I feel like that's kind of a cop-out, mm-hmm. but also... Yeah, I'm going to say Eevee. Megan, what are you?
I buy that. I'm a Jigglypuff.
Oh my gosh. Jigglypuff.
I'm a singer, and I... have a bad temper, and I just have to be the center of attention all the time.
Incredible. Oh, good choices.
I think actually Mewtwo's not who I embody, but maybe someone I want to embody one day.
Aspirational.
Yeah, aspirational Pokemon.
Does that mean
identity.
You're a Mew now?
Maybe I'm a Mew right now. Yeah, I think I'm a Mew right now. Maybe a little mischievous, and I'm a Mew right now, but maybe one day I'll become a Mewtwo. We'll see.
That is so profound.
Literally, like Pokemon philosophy right here.
Look, Evgenia has Sailor Moon on ice, so we know maybe Pokemon on ice.
Maybe Pokemon on ice, maybe.
Why not?
I joked with Tomoki doing a Pokemon show piece, like an exhibition piece. I'll be asking.
Oh my god.
He's Pikachu.
Yes.
Yeah, now we need to see that. We're adding that to the bucket list.
Yeah.
The viral potential of that. We talk sometimes on the podcast, we talk about those pieces that kind of cross over from like figure skating world into just like people sharing it on Facebook because they're like, oh my yeah. god, look at this thing people did. Like when Elisaveta Tuktomyshova did her toxic exhibition and everyone's like yeah. losing their minds. I feel like if y'all did a Pokemon one, that might be out there.
I hope so. It would bring some popularity to the skating world, possibly. Power Pokemon. Such a vast audience Pokemon. For that.
Speaking of characters, speaking of plushies, as we said before, we do have a segment called Plushie Corner where we recap and sometimes rate how strong was the plushie game at different events. So I was at US Nationals. Mm-hmm. So I got to see this in person, which was a treat. But you received a bear that was like dressed up as you.
Oh, what my was, gosh. What,
talk us through that moment.
Yeah, I have this one really supportive Japanese fan who runs my Japanese fan page, and she's been a really big supporter, and she's done some stuffed animals with my costume on it, and it's always so cool to see that because it really proves like the dedication of fans, and I love having it because it's honestly, it's always going to be in my possession, and maybe one day, 20, 30 years from now, I'll look back at this stuffed animal and be like, oh my gosh, that's me, wait. That performance. I remember that one time in Canada where I did that quad toe in that costume. And it's just, they're very good token pieces for me. It's very cool to see someone's dedication and effort to go and actually get a stuffed animal and dress them up just like you.
Plushies are powerful. I'm telling you, it's not just a
very important part yeah. of figure skating.
It is.
Since we're already talking about your costumes, we kind of talked about it off air as well. You have a very long track record on our pod as someone who knows how to wear a very good slappy blouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're fans. Anytime you wear anything, basically, it's our favorite.
Oh, thank you.
How does your costume selection go? Like, what's that process like?
The short program, actually, I can't say it was mine. It was Josh Ferris's costume, actually, from, I think, about 4 years ago.
He choreographed that, right?
He did choreograph that program, too. So it wasn't a custom piece for me. And my last year's West Side Story was, like, a super chill, just... button-down shirt, and that was also Josh Ferris's from his Give Me Love, the absolutely mm-hmm. stunning, beautiful program he did, and I loved it. So I've kind of had this trend of stealing Josh's costumes. Actually, I'm in my closet right now, and I have three of his costumes right here. So some of my costumes are actually his, but usually the blouses, those are mine, and the blue one I wore last season, that was made for me, and I do have quite a lot of say in my costume. I do trust my designer. Her name is Lisa McKinnon.
Oh, the iconic Lisa McKinnon.
Super She's iconic. So good.
She's so amazing good. In her work. And I know that if I wanted to go for an extravagant blouse or something with a lot of sparkles and something that's really going to be like, wow, that's a costume, then I will always go for her for that because I will always trust her with that. Of course, I do get the final say and make sure like I really like it, but I don't think there's been a time that she's made a costume for me that I'm like, or at least sketched it out, and I have thought, I don't really like this. Everything she's done, I've loved.
We're both adult beginner figure skaters to some extent. Do you have any advice for people, maybe not us necessarily, but just like people who watch figure skating and are like, oh, I wish I could do that, but I know I'm 25 and I'll never be at the Olympics, so what's the point?
I feel like this answer is quite self-explanatory. I don't think that Olympics is always the end goal for everybody because there's a very small group of people that could be possible Olympic competitors. So that leaves the whole 99.9% of other skaters left to not go to the Olympics and find something else. But skating really is a place for everyone. Like, there's the USFS Adults Skating Championships that people go to. One can become a choreographer. One can go do shows. One can honestly just do skating for what they love, for themselves. Even I do enjoy, like, sometimes it kind of bites me in the butt, but I like watching skating events. And when I watch at Worlds, now that I actually could go to Worlds one day, I actually just enjoy watching the skating. I don't have a negative or positive connotation with that. I'm like, oh, wow, that was like a beautiful skate. Props to you. When I watch the men's event, like, it's kind of hard because some of these guys I compete against and there's that like, oh, I want to do better. But it's like at the end of the day, it's just skating and you're watching it for the performance they give. So people, I know people that watch skating, they may say, oh, I could never do that. But honestly, it's about self-fulfillment. And that's something that skating is great for teaching. And I'm just lucky that I'm in that specific niche that can compete internationally. Everyone enters the sport at a different age. But at the end of the day, like, there's always a place for someone.
It's been so great to have you. Anytime you want to come back and just like share anything you have on your mind, you're always welcome to come back on our show.
Thank you. Well, hopefully next season we can catch up again.
Oh my God. And, hell yeah.
Talk about what happened.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Thank you so much, Camden. It was so nice to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me on the show.
How fun was that? How fun was that?
Honestly, we had such a good time talking to Camden. We're very grateful for his time.
You can follow Camden on social media, on Twitter at Camden Polk and on Instagram at Cam Polk.
Tell him that you liked his interview. Go shout him out. This was a very, very exciting interview and we're very hyped to bring you more of this good content soon. But in the meantime, we're out here every week.
We sure are. And if you're new, we hope you stick around and thanks for listening.
Megan, where are you?
I'm at Megan Kelleher 3 everywhere. Where are you, Netta?
I'm at Netta Marie everywhere. That's N-E-D-A, and that's just Marie on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find both of us at IcedPod. Also everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon is patreon.com/IcedPod. Like we said in the break, you make this happen. Megan, who are some incredible, truly just legendary people who have already done good things for us on Patreon?
Those legends are Jordan, Danny, Julia, Daniel, Heath, Jennifer, Caitlin, Susan, Phoebe, in spirit I am always throwing plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Daniil Gleichengau's choreography number one stan, Joseph, KM, Samira, Haley, and Sally Hatchett.
Oh my god, guys, thank you so much. And if you want to join this list, you know where to find us.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.